we were running tests for our clients, we're running A-B tests, we're trying to optimize, we're trying to drive more conversions, leads, sales, whatever, and we're just not getting any results. And it's so frustrating because, you know, you're reading all the blog posts, you're like following the best practices, you're reverse engineering whatever your competitor did. And then for me, it was kind of a light bulb moment where I was like, okay, what is a conversion? What is a conversion? I'm like, oh wait, it's a decision. So if I want to actually understand how our customers make decisions, I need to understand their emotional drivers.
Welcome to Talking Too Loud, the show that serves the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. I'm your host, Chris Savage, and today we're getting loud about how marketers kind of lost the plot. Somewhere between the dashboards, the A-B tests, and the data-driven everything, we forgot that real people are on the other side of the screen. My guest, Talia Wolf, is here to change that. She's the founder of GetUplift and the creator of Emotional Targeting, a marketing framework built on one simple truth, that emotion drives every decision. In today's episode, we get into the power of social listening, why B2B purchases are more emotional than people realize, how AI is making it harder and more important to stay human, and how slowing down to actually talk to your customers might just be the fastest way to grow. Talia, so good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This show is called Talking Too Loud, and I know you talk too loud, and I talk too loud, but what are you talking too loud about today? What's got you excited?
I am like really excited about emotional targeting, which I think you know is like my methodology, my framework, what we do at my agency. And that always gets me talking too loud. As mentioned, I'm usually like the loudest person, and I have to remind myself to like, cool the excitement. It's cool. It's great. But like, a little less.
Awesome. Well, we are going to talk about that, obviously. And just to set it up a little bit, I feel like we've had tons of marketers on the show. And often people want to talk about data, right? They want to talk about kind of the opposite to your approach. Like, oh, we're doing this test. And then we did this, learned this really interesting thing from the data and the data and the data and the data. But you talk about emotional targeting and how emotion really drives everything that we do. And I want to get into the whole thing, but I want to kind of start with like, was there a specific moment or project where it kind of clicked and you're like, hey, like the data I'm looking at actually isn't telling the full story? Is there something that kind of caused you to see the world differently around this?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few instances where I was like, this makes no sense. We were running tests for our clients. We're running A-B tests. We're trying to optimize. We're trying to drive more conversions, leads, sales, whatever. And we're just not getting any results. And it's so frustrating because, you know, you're reading all the blog posts. You're like following the best practices. You're reverse engineering whatever your competitor did. And like, this is going to work. And every time we'd launch and zilch, nothing, nada. Yeah. And then for me, it was kind of a light bulb moment where I was like, okay, what is a conversion? What is a conversion? I'm like, oh wait, it's a decision. And I think that moment of me saying, oh, what I need is to understand decisions. Like, how do people make decisions? And then that will make it so much easier for us to optimize funnels because we'll know how people make decisions, what they care about, what they don't, and we'll help them make a good decision for themselves. And that's kind of where it was. So it was really like a lot of frustration and feeling like I know nothing. And why am I even running this business? Right. And then you're and like, you're saying, I need this.
And just to play it back, you're saying like, you feel like you're following best practices. You're reading the blog posts where people are dissecting why they did something a certain way. And then you try to put it into practice and it doesn't deliver.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is this not delivering? And it's basically getting back to just the human element of like, well, there is a person sitting behind the screen. There's a person who has their whole life and their work and colleagues and goals. And this person is going to have to make some instinctual decisions every day. And that's going to impact, of course, their conversion rates and stuff like that. So it started going from the other side.
Absolutely. It was trying to understand, okay, the data that we've been collecting so far, just going back to what you were talking about before, is age, geographical location, genders, browsers, devices. Like, we're so focused on behavioral data, which is fine, but we're collecting them like Pokemons because we're told to be data driven. But that data only tells us where the problem is. It's not telling us the why. And what I needed to uncover was like, okay, what is the actual problem? What's preventing people from converting? Why do they buy products? What's stopping them from buying a product? And that's where emotional targeting comes in, because that's when I started to uncover that every decision that we make in life is based on emotion. So if I want to actually understand how our customers make decisions, I need to understand their emotional drivers. And that's just stuff that we didn't do back then at all online. Yeah. It was just like the old, you know, TV ads that would play on your emotional strings and you'd cry when you hear a phone call.
No, but that's interesting, because I think it's like, we've talked about this a lot, is like having too much data or the wrong data can be so distracting. Yep. Because I think even for like the personality types of the people working on those problems, they're like, well, I really like this because I have, quote, perfect data.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, oh, I'm going to manipulate it within my little perfect data. What's going to happen when like it's always perfect till a point, right? There's always some, it's like, I can see everything from when they hit my website, but I can't see anything about how they're talking to each other about the product, how they're thinking about the brand, how they're thinking about the problem, what other stressors they have going on. And like, that's where all the opportunity is usually.
Yeah. And not to mention that the data you're collecting is on your website in your little bubble, but your prospects aren't even making the decision on your website. They're on Reddit, they're on LinkedIn, they're on YouTube, they're on Quora. They're like all over the web on Facebook groups, having conversations with other people and making the decisions there. And if you're not part of that conversation, if you're not combing through all of those discussions, then you don't actually know anything about your customers other than the segments that they fit into. Yeah. But even if you have those segments, you now need to figure out like, okay, what do I say to these segments? And that's the missing data no one's collecting.
It sounds kind of overwhelming. What should somebody do if they're honest with themselves, as you're encouraging us to be, about like, hey, this part of their journey is a tiny fraction of their journeys on your website? Where should they start? Like, how do you approach the problem when you admit it's this big?
I think the good news is that no one else is doing it. The bad news is that it's hard. So if you want to like really do this, you need to commit. But once you do it, you'll have a huge competitive advantage because your competitors are not doing this. And just to mention this, like, because we have to say AI at least three times.
Good job. Say it
like
one
you
more.
Turn into a mushroom or something, you know. So the more marketers use AI, the more we're collecting, we're all saying and sounding and looking the same because we're pulling from the same slop and blech on AI. So it's getting harder and harder for your prospects to tell the difference between you and your competitor because everyone looks and sounds the same. So if you want to get started, the first thing you need to do is research. And not the data research that we just discussed, but actual research. So for example, social listening and review mining are an incredible place to start. You don't need a budget for it. You need 25 minutes, honestly, 25 minutes to find some conversations on Reddit, comb through those conversations, and even plug them into ChatGPT, Perplexity, whatever, and ask it to put it into buckets. Like, what are the pains that they're mentioning? What are their desired outcomes that they're mentioning? What have they tried before that hasn't worked? What do they hate? What frustrates them? What's keeping them up at night? All that stuff ChatGPT can now quickly give you, because I used to go through hundreds of conversations and do this myself and like pivot tables. But now you can use AI. So 25 minutes and you've already got substantial information that you can start testing. You can suddenly send out an email about a specific pain and see how people respond to it. You can send out an email about a desired outcome and see how people respond to it. So the research is the core part that you have to do.
Yeah, it's so funny because like you're like, you're gonna have to do something really hard. You're gonna have to spend 25 minutes reading what people have said.
I mean, which honestly, is, you do need more, right? Like,
no, but I actually, you know, it gets me to this other point, which is like, in my own journey, I feel like the early days, all I had was talking to customers. There's nothing else because we had no customers. So it's just like I'm trying to get customers, and I'm talking to people who could be customers. I'm trying to convince them. I'm calling them. I'm emailing them. Whatever. And then there was a moment when we had momentum, we had enough customers that I could look at dashboards. And I remember thinking, okay, my job is like, I'm supposed to look at the dashboard to understand what's going on. And you look at the dashboard, you get a sense of what's going on, but you're inherently removed from the individual customer experience by doing that. And so there was a moment in time when I relied too much on analytics and not enough on conversations. And yeah. I eventually flip back to like, yeah, of course I'm going to look at the dashboards, but I'm also going to have lots of conversations with customers directly. And I'm going to value that highly, even if it's a small absolute number.
Absolutely. Where, it's just, you need it.
Which is like, it's funny because it's like, I'm so comfortable now with the fact that if I talk to 10 customers and they all have a similar problem, it's probably a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? It's probably a huge deal. I don't think that the world is so unique that I randomly talk to 10 people who have the same problem. I look at it like, if I talk to 10 people have the same problem, probably millions of people who have that problem. And it took me a long time to make that jump, even though in the beginning, that's the jump you make, right? Like when you're starting, you talk to 10 customers, you're like, oh, there could be millions of people, but there's something funny about having the dashboard with all the data. It's easy to trick yourself not to do the basic, obvious stuff.
But here's the cool thing. You speak to 10 customers and you're like, okay, there's a problem I'm seeing. So on the product side, you could maybe create a new feature. You could maybe talk about that product more or a feature more or a core part of your solution that solves that problem. But the additional thing that you now have is you actually have the voice and the language that your customers use to describe the problem and to also describe why the problem happens and what they've tried before that hasn't worked, what has worked for them, why your particular product or solution actually solves the problem. So instead of just saying we're, you know, an all-in-one solution for X, you can now literally use quotes and language that your customers use, which isn't what you think is cool, but what they're actually saying. And that in itself just helps you in so many different pieces of marketing, product, sales. So everything goes up. Everyone gets the benefit of you simply talking to 10 customers.
Yeah. And I think it also, I completely agree with you and have seen the same thing. And I want to go deeper into the like emotional response and really thinking about, so you're talking about the research, you're trying to get the perspective on what's the language people use, what are the problems they have, and then what does that mean about, especially in B2B, like why do we care about the emotional part of this? Like why does it, isn't it just work? Isn't it just like, is there no emotion in work?
Did you know that was my favorite question I get asked? Favorite question. I love it. I'm like, yes, of course, B2B buyers are robots. So I would argue that a B2B purchase is even more emotional than a B2C purchase, because when you're buying something for yourself, like think headphones or I don't know, a dog leash, all you have to do is like talk to yourself or a significant other and that's it. But when you're buying anything for a business, there's so many emotions involved. There's so many different people that you have to appease. And a wrong decision could actually cost you your job. Like there are so many emotional pieces there. I recently saw a research by Think with Google who said that B2B buyers are 8 times more likely to buy a product that's more expensive if they see personal value. So think about that. They're like looking at 4 different, I don't know, accounting softwares, or they're looking at project management solutions and they are mostly the same. But if they see personal value, which we can talk about what that means in B2B.
Yeah, we should. Yeah.
Then they will pay more, even though they could probably get the same tool with the same features from the competitor. But personal value means maybe I'll get a promotion. Maybe people will see me as the go-to in the company. Maybe I will finally feel more confident about myself and my skills. Maybe that means that I get to rally everyone. There's all sorts of self-image, how I want to feel about myself, and the social image, emotions involved, how do I want other people to think about me that are involved in a B2B purchase. So yeah, it's really emotional.
Yeah, that's interesting. The personal value piece is something that I think, you know, on the really big enterprise deals, we know that for a long time people have like wined and dined, right? And it's like, okay, you're this big prospective customer. I'm going to take you out to this fancy dinner. And we've like poo-pooed that a lot, I think, especially in like SaaS B2B. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. Just come to the site. And yeah, we don't need to talk to you. Like, just like go do it. Yeah. But for a lot of people, that's like, well, I'm going to these fancy dinners and I'm doing this fun stuff. And like, I'd like to keep doing it. And also maybe you feel that the people you're connecting with are like really good connections for your career. Maybe not necessarily this one job, but in the future. And all you're saying, all of these things factor together when you are making a big complex decision. Because I agree with you, like so often you are trying to appease many people inside a company when you're making these decisions. And B2B can be incredibly emotional. I completely agree with that. And it's, again, sounds counterintuitive because we just think business robots. But do you think that there's a link between that too, where like, you know, on the enterprise side, people found their way towards these kind of like more emotional, softer things to get the deals done. And now like we have to find ways of bringing that into the experiences and into the brands and into, you know, the like self-service side of this too.
So honestly, like, I think when people think about emotional targeting, they think about like a fluffy headline or something that's kind of like, just have a lovely value prop. But real emotional resonance is something. Sorry. Like, just put some sprinkles on top.
Yeah.
Show a happy family. But honestly, like, real emotional resonance when someone comes to your website, because here's the thing, you're not trying to trigger any emotions, right? Like, you're not trying to make people feel stuff. Your goal is that people are already feeling things. You need to relate to them. You need to communicate with them. You need to show them that they've arrived at the right place, that this is the product for them. And real emotional resonance happens throughout the entire customer journey. Everything that they click on, they open, they download, every social media post they see, every email that they get from you, even like the call to action button or the demo page or the text message if you're sending them, all of those have to work together and actually resonate on an emotional level with people. And ultimately, you can't do that unless you really know your customers well. And then you can also obviously like optimize your product and optimize sales and product marketing. But everyone has to do that as like the most basic thing in order to optimize.
Can you tell when you like look at a company's website, whether or not you think they're going to have some like emotional resonance or not?
So... you can pretty quickly see that a lot of websites are using the same generic themes. One of the things I will say when I do workshops for companies, I'm like, hey, if I were to take your logo and switch it out with your competitors, would people even notice? And most people will say no, they probably wouldn't notice because everyone looks and sounds the same. So if you're now looking at a website, it is kind of, especially in B2B, easy to see where they've gone for generic themes or they're copying competitors or they're staying on the safe side, because there's also an element of risk when you do emotional targeting, especially in B2B, because it's scary to go into your board and say to them, hey, I know that everyone else is saying they're powered by AI and they're the number one software or the all-in-one whatever platform for X, but we're going to say something completely different. And that's also a risk in B2B. So it is quite easy to spot where people have tried to just be risk-free and go for the generic themes. And that's you know, we did, I think 2 years ago, we ran user interviews and did a whole like UX interview with 20 founders of agencies to see how they choose project management solutions. And we saw that they all use the website the same way. And this kind of speaks to what you were talking about before, which is they look at like the homepage, they look at pricing to make sure everyone, you know, the pricing's the same, features, yes, 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 integrations, yes, yes, yes. And then they're just like, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll go to Reddit. So yeah, the short answer is yes, it is easy.
I'd love if you can share some examples of people you think maybe the, I want to say the most extreme example you can think of, but like, could you give us an example that you would put on the more extreme side in a good way of like optimizing for emotional resonance so people can really understand what that means? Because I think we get what you're saying when you talk about the all-in-one for X. And also, I think what you just described is perfect in terms of, hey, everyone goes through the same pattern, which is like, oh, do you have the features? Is the price like fair? You know, and then it's like, what do I do? So what is it? What would an example be of somebody who did this and they really do stand out and it does feel really different?
So one of the things that we did with this client that we were interviewing all these these agency founders for is we realized very quickly that when people were trialing a project management solution, they weren't trialing one. They were usually comparing between two or three. And what we did boldly, I might say, and I was very proud of this client, is we basically put in the main menu and navigation of the website, compare us, and invited people to compare our client to their competitors. And you would hover over that comparison and you would see the biggest players in the game. And then you would click on those and 5,000 words of actual comparison, not the feature by feature, yes, no, kind of what we know and pricing, but real comparison.
Actually
of like,
in depth, yeah.
Yes, like we'll help you make a decision. And that is quite bold for like a B2B company because they're actually creating content people need to make a decision and actually calling out your competitors and saying, they're saying it's this much, but it's actually going to cost you twice as much if you look at the upsells. That is really understanding what your prospects need and helping them make a better decision that's right for them. And even saying on those pages, by the way, if you need this and this, you should definitely use our competitor. They're much better for you than we are. And that is, in my opinion, a good example of like extreme kind of a way of really creating emotional resonant content.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like extreme honesty, extreme clarity, and extreme, like, you know, what's the word? I don't know the word, but like, you know, they're comparing anyway.
Yeah.
So why not just like help them? Yeah.
And again, like if you don't do it, they're going to go to Google or ChatGPT and they're going to get the blah, 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 blah. So like actually create that content. Yeah. And by the way, that's the content that's appearing right now in AI, right? When people now look to compare between companies, those comparison pages, which we created probably 3 years ago now, are showing up still like number one in any LLM search because that's actual content that solves problems for people.
It's interesting because like you have this insight that people are comparing multiple products at once, that they're not going to get the answer on any of the websites. So they're going to go somewhere else. And instead you say, well, they're going to come to us because they're going to compare us. Let's do this and present it in such a way that it's credible.
Yeah.
That seems like that's the other risk in there, right? Is like actually being truly, I don't see it as a risk personally, but a lot of people would be afraid of being credible because like, if you talk about your own weaknesses, that seems like it's not normally what you should do. But in this case, you're saying, hey, on this front, like if you're looking at it in this way, you should pick our competitor.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do this, like this boldly honest thing.
Yeah.
And that is where like the resonance is going to come from because the customers are like, wow, I can't believe they actually did this. I can't believe they talked about how they're not good at this thing. And so I now trust them. And therefore, if I can trust them here, probably I can trust their product and their experience and their brand.
Yeah. And I'll also add one important part to that. We were able to do this because we were very, very clear who our client was speaking to. A lot of times, especially in B2B, we speak to everyone because everyone's our customer. Because this brand was so specific and willing to say, no, of course, anyone can use our project management solution, but we're specifically designed for agencies. If you do client work, you want to use this product.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier to write the comparison page because we can say, here are the different things that as an agency owner, you need from a project management solution. And this is how this company helps you. So when you know who your audience really is, and
so it's not generic.
Exactly. It's a lot easier to say, like, you could use us, but if you're client work facing, you have to use us. And that's the difference.
Let's go. I know this is not what we're here to talk about, but I think some people get afraid of this idea of what you're talking about to be this focused on a specific customer and the idea of like, well, anyone can sign up, but like, we're going to be really hyper focused on the best one.
Yeah.
What is your advice for people thinking through that?
I think that we're all looking for like the risk-free version of how do I not miss out on someone? But what I've seen, and if we're talking about tech and B2B, is that we widen the funnel and we accept everyone, and then we don't understand why everything else is going down because we're basically allowing anyone who's anyone to sign up to a product, which we didn't build for. We didn't build our product for them. And so top of funnel looks great. But then when you start looking at churn, you're like, holy moly, why is this happening? And it's the same, like if you're a service provider, if you're a solution, like if you are an e-commerce, like anyone who just tries to widen the funnel too much, what I see a lot is A, you end up with very like unclean data. So you have a lot of people you can't really learn from. Two, which is probably even bigger, is that you're alienating the people that could be really good customers because they're coming to your website and like, I don't know if this is for me or not. So they're just leaving. Or maybe they sign up, but everything is kind of confusing. The more specific you are, the easier it is to sell to them and upsell. Now, I know it's scary. So I'm not saying like only target this specific thing and no one else, because that can also like really dilute your market and make it smaller. But I'm sure that if you were honest with yourself, you could probably put off at least 20% or 30% of the prospects that are coming in because they're incorrect for you and you don't want them there.
That is bold and that is scary.
It is.
It is.
Yeah, but it's human instinct, I feel like, to do the opposite.
Yeah,
it totally.
It's like
is.
To write the copy and like, oh, well, this will work for anybody. Because so it's very general because then I'll get more customers. But
right. But if it's not like, the right customer, right, that like the argument the is like, that it's not. Yeah,
exactly. But by being very direct.
We just didn't say anything but talked over each other and it was amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
But I will say, and now it's the same with AI, right? So everyone's kind of pulling from the same stuff and no one knows anything. And then everyone I speak to is like, we're getting more leads from AI and everyone's super excited. But the people coming have no idea who this company is, what they do, what their value prop is. So let's say you do start getting traffic from AI, which is what everyone wants right now. You have to be very super specific so that when that person lands on your website, they immediately see the value to them, that you understand them, that you built this thing for them, and they shouldn't leave because otherwise they're tap jumping to the next thing and they're just hopping from one thing to the next. So you need to be even more specific right now, especially with traffic going down.
And I think with competition going up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's the other, it hasn't fully happened yet, but like the AI coding is not, you know, vibe coding and stuff is here, but like the true, like anyone can make software of anything is not really here yet. And that will come though. And it's going to mean, at least in software, we're going to have more competition. So being more clear who you're for is going to be more important.
Yeah. And also anyone can create anything now, right? Anyone can like spin up something that may be similar to what you're offering now. So the more customer focused you can be, the more you will stand out. the more you make it about the customer and create content for them and relate to them on an emotional level, the more you will have the strategic advantage, because someone is going to come along and create something better than you. There's just, there's no way of, you know, getting in the way of that, especially that now all the tools are out there, but strategy is the thing that, you know, seeing the full picture and really understanding your customers isn't something you can skip over now anymore.
Yeah. And strategy is saying no to stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It's like having a plan of what we're going to do. And part of the plan is to say, we're not going to do these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also feels like the whole company like has to be speaking the same language in this regard. Like, it can't just fall to the marketing team or the sales team or the customer success team. Like, everybody has to be really clear on the emotional targeting and like how you're solving a problem for somebody. Do you feel like that's an issue in B2B? Like, only one department is really paying attention to the emotional side?
I will say that most clients that hire us, it comes in from marketing, obviously, like growth, CRO, they want to increase conversions. Over time, almost every team uses our research. Sales use it to, you know, better know like, hey, what are people going to say no to on a call and what their real hesitations are. Product marketing uses it to create better content and actual better emails. You've got SEO teams creating better. So email marketing, it actually helps bridge that gap, because it's so much easier to say, look, here's what your customers are saying and here's what you guys are saying over here. And there's a big gap and let's close that. And the more results come in, the more everyone else from sales, marketing, customer success, they're all going to start using that because it's working and everyone's using the same words and describing the same things. So that's usually the buy-in is usually from the marketing, but it serves everyone on the team.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
So you told us before you could spend 25 minutes, go through this stuff, figure it out. For somebody who's like not, maybe they're starting to get convinced, but they're trying to convince themselves of the value here. What are the other quick and easy things that they can do to understand some of the opportunity around emotional targeting?
So what I like to do is this quick research. So like social listening and review mining, which is what we discussed before, like combing through Reddit, for example, but then adding 5 more minutes to going through your website and auditing it from a strategic point. So not, I'm not saying like, hey, look at best practices. Do you have one call to action button or two? Or, you know, the generic stuff. I'm inviting you to ask yourself, from what you just learned from those 25 minutes, are you making it about yourself or about the customer? Are you highlighting their real pains, the things that they actually feel every day? Are you highlighting their desired outcomes, what they really are trying to achieve? Just looking at that stuff, or hey, am I using generic social proof or actual quotes that dismantle hesitations and concerns? Just going for your website, you will find so many opportunities. Like, oh my God, we're using stories that don't relate. We're using copy that doesn't make any sense. The visuals have nothing to do with what we just learned about our customers. We're talking about this feature. No one freaking cares about this. They care about that. So that honestly is what helps you see the gap. And then you can start testing small. I'm not saying redesign your website. I'm saying try an ad, try an email subject line, see what works more, run some interviews, see how people respond. You can do small tests with so much insights from like a 20-minute research piece.
Yeah. Convince yourself in small ways, basically. And then that's going to be, if you can start to like, cause I mean, it's the most common thing that I feel like people do is make it about themselves versus about the customer. So like, if you're going through and you're seeing like, oh wow, this really isn't about the customer, you start to change it. There's obviously like, look at your data, but I would imagine the other thing you'd encourage someone to do is like literally send it to one of those potential customers and be like, does this work for you? Does this resonate?
Yeah. Exactly. And again, like, obviously, we all need to look at data. This is not me saying like behavioral data doesn't matter. It matters. But if you're staring at your screen right now and you're like, I don't understand why. Like, I've done all the things. I followed the foundations. I'm doing all this stuff and it's not working. Chances are you're not doing emotional targeting. You're not resonating on an emotional level. So if you now look at your website in a different light and ask yourself these questions, you'll easily see where the gap is, what's not working, what is, how you can start testing smaller things. And that will also help you get buy-in from everyone else around you.
I think it's such good advice. And like, especially when speed, it feels like people are obsessed with going fast. Like, this is an opportunity to like take a beat and slow it down. I'm a fan of that. You know me. You know me, Savage. I go slow.
Oh, because I heard this as go faster.
Really? I heard it as go. Because intentionally.
Well, that's yes, I think go intentionally, but I guess what I mean is a lot of the stuff that Talia's talking about is like, go talk to a small number of people or go see what they're saying and then try the quick thing versus being too attached to whatever your framework is for how you already like set up your messaging and stuff.
Oh, interesting. Okay. It's quick. Do you feel like it has a fast or a slow vibe, Talia? Or neither, or you both. Know,
it's funny because before you said it's only 25 minutes, I'm like, marketers are lazy. And also, sorry, I'm a marketer.
We're going to clip that part.
I'm a marketer. I'm a marketer and we're lazy. We don't want to do 25 minutes of research and we're outsourcing all of our thinking to AI. So it is actually a big ask. So it is kind of like slowing down. But you're slowing down in order to speed up, meaning you slow down to get the research you need, and then you can speed test stuff. So I've married the two of the ideas.
You have. It's the you perfect. Have.
Good job.
The perfect.
That was great. Talia, is there anything we missed that we should have asked you about? Like any really hot, like unconventional takes? Controversial takes, things that you're like, man, I wish they would ask me about this because like, it's going to make this the top episode of the year. Like we're going to win a Signal Award for this episode.
I don't know. No, I think, I mean, I told you before, I think my favorite question is always like, but I have a boring product or I'm B2B. Yeah. That doesn't work, which is my favorite thing because that's where, I mean, they B2B companies and boring products can have the most uplift from this approach. And I think you nailed it. You asked all the great questions. I'm really proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, it was super good to see you. I'm sorry it's been so long. We won't make it as long till the next time we see you again. But where can people connect with you? Where can they learn more?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can connect with me on my website, getuplift.co. You can get my new book. I have a book, by the way.
Oh wow.
Did I tell you? I have a book.
Let's talk about the book.
There's a book.
Oh, there it is.
There's a book. It came out this year in June. And I'm really excited about it because it's my process and how to use it.
What's it called?
Emotional targeting. Yeah. Insane, right? Win hearts, boost sales, own the market.
Love it.
I like it. Yeah. That has like clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose energy.
It does.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. I think the best feedback I keep getting on, which is like the best feedback, is like, it's so short. We can read it like in an hour. And I'm like, that's what my ADHD brain needs, short books that I could implement quickly. And
yes.
Yeah. It only took a year and a half to write.
That's not bad. Congratulations.
That feels fast.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That feels fast.
It's a wild thing I will never do again.
Go to your website, find you on LinkedIn.
Get the book.
Talia, so good to see you. And thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
I know that interview gave you life.
It did. I love emotions. I love understanding why people do the things we do. I hate dashboards.
You love understanding. You hate dashboards.
So I'm like, I'm all in. I am all in on emotional targeting. But yeah, it really is both. It's the why and it's the testing of the, you know, once you figure out the why, the testing.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in there, and being clear about who you're for, not being afraid to scare some people away to attract the other right people in. You know, it's like a snapshot of like, I think where we are with AI too, to a degree of like how AI search is impacting things, what's going to come. Is going to be a lot more competition. Trying to be more clear about like who your best customers has never been more important, and then how you resonate with them. So yeah, it was super fun. And it's funny, I hadn't talked to her in a long time. And I was like instantly just brought back to conversations I had with her at WistFS years ago. And so that was, it was just great for me too. Yeah, that was a fun one. Yeah. That was great. Yeah, we'll be back again with another episode in 2 weeks. But don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you consume Talking Too Loud. And you can always connect with Sylvie and I on LinkedIn. Stay on the lookout for our emails. And you can even email us at ttailpod@wist.com if you have ideas for guests, topics, things you want us to dig into. And we will see you soon. I think that's it.
That's it.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage. Produced by me, Sylvie Lubow, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.